The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. That music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. This is part of our series of preview podcasts for the Rochester Fringe Festival. That's the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival happening September 9th to 20th in downtown Rochester, New York. Go to RochesterFringe.com to find out all the events. Get the app so you can find stuff on the fly. And I'm here with some guests. Guests, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm James Tabby from the Heroic Enthusiasts.
And I am Tom Ferrara from the Heroic Enthusiasts.
And we are the Heroic, Enthusiasts.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about your event first. Okay. So your event is what days and where is it located?
We're going to be at the Memorial Art Gallery's M&T Ballroom. Beautiful, beautiful space in the MAG in the old Cutler Union Church there. And we're going to be playing September 12th. That's Friday night. I think we start at 7. Yep, 7 o'clock. And that's the date and time of our show. We're really excited for it.
That's awesome. And yeah, and like I mentioned, you get your tickets at RochesterFringe.com. A lot easier to grab it ahead of time. Obviously, if you show up and there's still tickets, you can grab it then. But it's always great to buy ahead of time. It helps everybody, including the venue and the performers, so they know that there's people showing up to their event. First, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this performance. I know you guys just came out with a new album recently. Mm-hmm. Would you consider this a typical concert? Would you consider this something that's outside of your typical style?
What one of the nice things that Fringe has started doing is bringing pure music acts into the fold, as opposed to just performance and plays and a spectacle.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, so we were excited to learn that, and this will very much be a musical performance. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a little bit of extra things for people to see and dance to, but mostly, yeah, it's going to be our performance. We are expanding it. As you mentioned, we just had an album come out, Illuminate, and we're pretty much going to be playing the entire album.
Oh, awesome.
So that's not anything we've done before, plus a few things from our back catalog.
Yeah, we played at the Fringe many years ago, a small show at Bernunzio's, and that was enjoyable. We support Fringe. I think a lot of people don't realize that the Fringe here in Rochester is the second largest Fringe in the world.
Yeah,
and I think that tells you a lot about Rochester and the opportunities here.
Yeah, I got to say, it was a little jarring when I heard that when I interviewed Erica about a week or so ago when she mentioned that. It was a little bit jarring, but in retrospect, it shouldn't have been because, you know, Rochester really turns out for the Fringe. Like, there's this appetite for interesting and creative pursuits.
Yeah, we are known as a festival city, aren't we, for some reason?
Yeah.
I think people get so pent up throughout the winter that they just want to get out and have some fun.
Yeah. So what I'd like for you guys to do is tell me a little bit about what is the style of the heroic enthusiast? Like, how do you describe your style of music to people? Because it's, you know, listening to it is not the same as you guys describing it.
Well, I might jump in here.
Go first,
the Heroic Enthusiasts have been around since around 2014 when Tom and I first had the idea. And we were influenced by a number of different ideas and other projects and acts. And it was very confusing because we were bringing in all kinds of elements. And I used to call our style, our genre, post-punk, alt-indie, pop rock. And I would love telling that to people because they'd be like, what? And they're like, oh, I like that or I like this. And but over the years, I think we've refined our sound and we really do consider ourselves to be synth pop, you know, but we still have a lot of guitar elements. So it's not pure synth music and it's not pure pop. It's synth pop with a bit of an edge. Anything to add, Tom?
Yeah, I would say that we started, actually the first band we listened to was quite, that inspired us to do this was a band called Beak. And they were, two of the guys were in Portishead.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they were pretty.
Out there.
Yeah, experimental.
Well, I was going to say that band in general was a little out there, yeah. And then that's even going
and,
further.
And yeah. Beak was further, it was experimental. And I was turned on to them in the oddest way. I was at a clothing store in New York and they started playing the song and I just kind of Shazammed it.
Yeah.
And found out what it was. Something they had used on a runway show. It was spectacular. So James and I got it together and we started working with it. And we've been growing, you know, we've been growing our songwriting and our performance abilities over the years. We had a opportunity to work with Stephen Haig, who produced Pet Shop Boys.
Oh, wow.
New Order, Susie and the Banshees.
I mean, what,
Peter Gabriel.
What a luxury to, especially people who saw that, you know, a lot of that kind of music.
He's the godfather of synth pop on top of it. And we had decided after being a four-piece kind of rock band, you know, kind of alternative rock band, that we would go synth pop, just be the two of us. And yeah, and so we were able to get him interested in working with us, and we worked with him for 2 years.
Wow,
he did more than that. Really, last EPs.
Yeah, we did two EPs, two singles, and the full album.
Yeah,
I think it was more like from the time we started to now, like 4 years.
Oh yeah, from when we started. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I'm kind of interested in. So you mentioned you're doing more like, you know, alternative. What was, you know, it seems like your influences are diverse. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're, you know, coming to this as a duo, what was the drive? I mean, obviously you had some similar ideas and passions, but what was the drive to switch at that point to this versus being a larger group?
Do you know how hard it is to find a good drummer in this town?
Oh, I can't imagine.
Why don't we just use a drum machine?
Well, it's our roots. We were rooted in the '80s. And that's kind of where we really formed our lane, so to speak, way back then. And we've diversified from it. We've kind of gone over to the left side or the right side. But this time we thought it would be easier. And as James said, we had a great drummer, great bass player. And
we had a number of really good, really great bass players and drummers. But there was a lot of turnover. You know?
Yeah.
And the process of writing songs when we were a four-piece versus now is very, very different. And I think that the process as a duo, even though we're doing a lot of the composition and arranging in the box as opposed to in a rehearsal space, is much more intimate. And Tom and I can really spend time with the song, time with the tracks, time with the sounds, and really get what we're trying to communicate across a little easier. So I have found the two-piece process to be much more intimate and enriching, actually.
Yeah, so when you're talking about like that spark being something that is, I'd say, more outside of the box of approachable and what most people will necessarily recognize in the genres. How do you balance like what might be appealing from a creative endeavor that might be outside of what is popular or known even about the genre to creating something that is creatively satisfying? How do you balance the two between being approachable and something that is super creatively satisfying?
Well, as I said, we were working with Stephen Hague pretty much from after we did the first five songs, we demoed the first five songs. There's a story in that too.
Yeah.
But, and he felt, and he's written this, that, you know, we were one of the few bands that demos he had gotten from that were musical and he liked the songs, that we had some creative musical abilities that everybody else generally sends him beats and loops.
Beats and loops, yeah.
You know?
Interesting.
And that we didn't. So that he's kept, you know, we worked with him. He pretty much, by the time we did finish the Luminate, the album, he was kind of like our third unknown member.
Yeah. Mm.
He was, I mean, he co-wrote several of the songs with us. He, you know, it's great to be, you know, who we are and be in Rochester and people say, oh, you're from Rochester. Well, how good can you be, right? Mm. However, you know, when we would write a melody or write a lyric or play a guitar part and Steve would say, oh, that's good. You know, I mean, he's worked with Johnny Marr and Robbie Robertson and all these people. And it was spectacular. And the first five releases, feature releases off the album, because they dripped the album with five singles, all made it on the new and alternative Apple editorial playlist. And bands would, you know, give their, you know, their left arm to get on that once. And we got on it five times in a row, which still astounding to me, but.
And you know, at the same time, to get back to your question,
yeah,
the our label president at ECR Records often reminds us that, and we remind ourselves, and you know, write the song, make the art, don't worry about what if it's going to be popular, don't worry about the number of streams, do the good work, do it for yourself, and do what feels right. And then those, if it's good, it'll happen. So make it good.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, it's that moniker that, you know, can be sometimes the most frustrating thing to hear from somebody, you know, and as somebody who's, you know, struggled in his early 20s and other times to figure out who he was, who I was at the time. The thing that people tell you is, oh, do the things you love, do it the way you want to do it, and things will happen when they happen. It's sometimes the thing you want to hear least, but also tends to be true in the long run is, you know, following your passions, creating something that you're proud of. And that's something like we've been loving to do on Lunchador is just like, we just want to be around people doing great things and being around people who are trying to like make Rochester a better place and create something they're proud of. It seems like, you know, that's when I find musicians that I like listening to, they tend to go by that ethos as well, is this makes me happy. And that has to be, you know, that's the driver. And it's rare where you hear something that is so personal that has gone through 50 different hands and had 20 different writers on it. Mm-hmm. Right. I know in some of the music related ones, I've mentioned this ahead of time, but like when I listened to like Talking Heads, it hit me in a way that was hard to explain because the lyrics were so discordant from the songs, but they were catchy and they were so personal. And you couldn't have done that without these singular visions of here's these beats, here's the lyrics, and you combine those together. When you're creating songs, how do you go about that? Do you think about lyrics first? Do you think about the background first? Do you think about the story first? How does that process work between the two of you?
Well, if you like Talking Heads you haven't read How Music Works by David Byrne yet, I highly recommend you read his book.
Oh, I would love
It's a little bit dated at this point, but he goes a lot into the songwriting process for Talking Heads. In that, and he talks about music in general in a really beautiful way. So I recommend How Music Works by David.
I appreciate Burr. That.
Tom, how do we write music, man?
It's been a mix of different approaches. You know, sometimes I'll bring an idea to James and then he buys into it and we work on it. Sometimes he'll bring an idea to me and, you know, mm-hmm. we'd work on it and add it. You know, if you listen to some of the covers we've done, I mean, that would probably be a good example of how we take something and make it ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've had three covers that we've done in the list.
One more. There is also, to amplify that, there is a diversity of how we approach it, right? Like, I may bring a guitar chord pattern and Tom may bring a guitar chord pattern, or we might start with a beat, you know, a beat and a loop, and try to evolve it from there. So it really is very diverse for us. I'd say almost every song is a little bit different.
I think a lot of the songs on Illuminate, though, were really written while we were traveling or, mm-hmm. you know, in different places, and we'd have little travel guitars with us and come up with ideas and come back with them. We have several songs like that on the album.
Well, it's also like amazing that now you can even just record that as a voice memo with just tones mm-hmm. and then be able to collaborate wherever you are and just say, hey, here's this idea. Here's this, and just throw it across the globe
yep.
at somebody else, even though you live in the same town, that you can be wherever you are. And either with, you know, with electronic guitar or singing or whatever else, you can send it wherever you are. It has to be great as a duo that travels to be able to do that.
It really is wonderful. And as Tom mentioned, in our work with Stephen Haig, as that relationship matured, and we co-wrote some songs, a couple, I think maybe two songs on the album were Stephen Haig going back through his old recordings and like just sending us him singing a melody for a chorus.
Yeah.
And maybe like have a beat behind it. And then he'll send that to us and then I'd add synth parts and stuff. And then he'd say, oh, I like that. How about this for a verse? And then Tom would add some guitar parts. So yeah, it is amazing. We didn't meet Stephen in person until after our first EP with him was completely done and released.
Wow.
And then we went over to London for Tom's daughter's wedding, actually. And he came to the wedding.
To the wedding.
It was
great.
Yeah.
I had met him once before, but he's a character. He's a great guy.
Well, I mean, if you've done that kind of producing, you'd kind of have to be a bit of a character. Yeah,
it's almost impossible now to be affected, but positively. I mean, he's a genius.
Yeah. Well, and when you've seen all that too, right? And around such divergent personalities over decades of work, like you'd have to have a little bit of a weird cut to yourself.
And the greatest understanding I came away with was that a lot of the New Order songs that broke them here or Kiss Them For Me by Susie and the Banshees, some songs by OMD, he actually was the one who produced them and rearranged them and even got some co-writing on those. And
And I think it's the underrated part is like, you know, people know, they'll know parts of what makes a band run. Mm-hmm. They'll know parts of what it takes to make music happen, but it's never just one thing. It's never just the people you can see visually.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things going on. Mm-hmm. And kind of what I'm wondering is when you're releasing an album and you're starting to tour, right? Because you guys have been touring for a bit now as well, right?
We've been playing around a bit. Yeah.
Now that process, have you both toured, you know, more extensively before? Or was this like the biggest tour you've done?
No, we've both toured more extensively before.
For
yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting to a point where we love to play live and we also love to write music and, you know, finding the balance between those two. Tom actually toured extensively a few years ago.
Well, years ago.
A few.
I was signed to Columbia Records in the late 70s, and we toured around the States, and I lived in Germany. I had a band. We were signed to Teldec in Germany, and we toured Germany for a year and a half. We were playing, you know, 3-4 times a month.
Yeah.
And recording and living there. You know.
I was going to say, like, touring then had to be a very different thing
totally
than it is
different.
Now.
We got to open for Squeeze 3 times in Germany and the Go-Go's, but we opened for Squeeze at the Central Park series when they moved it to the 42nd Street by the aircraft carrier.
Mm.
It was very well attended. But so, yeah, we got all over. And we opened for a number of prominent artists, mm-hmm. aside from Joy Wave.
We've had some fun.
But Midjour, Midjour, we opened for Midjour, and that was great.
Of Ultravox, yeah.
We love him. And
no, it's yeah, it's something that is fascinating to me as somebody who does, like, I do my recording, you know, here at the studio in my house. And, you know, when my rare opportunities to do things in front of people, you know, it's so fascinating how it changes the way you do everything, you know, live, you know, talking to people live in front of other people and, you know, recording in a studio. It's a whole different ballgame.
And especially with electronic music, you know, the decision process of, you know, when we're writing, especially with this last album, when we're writing, we're not thinking about how the heck are we going to play it live. And so,
yeah.
And then it comes around to, oh, we need to play this live. Oh shit. what parts are going to be in the box? What can we actually execute live? We've brought on a electronic drummer.
Oh, awesome.
A live person playing electronic drums to be clear. And
Tim Wainwright.
His name is Tim Wainwright. He plays for a number of bands around town. And just the addition of him supplementing the backing tracks and really adding a groove and a flavor is like, it changes the way we play.
Yeah.
And the instrumentation that we choose on what we're playing live versus not. So, yeah, it's a very different world today when the composition is not on instruments that, or the composition is such that it's probably physically impossible to play some of the parts.
And performing and playing live is a totally different physical demand on the body.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And a mind. Then you got so much more going on. I mean, it's like, it's great. I mean, we love it. I mean, it feeds our souls. We jump on the stage and we feel like we're, you know, 25 again. So,
yeah. So, I mean, guys, I mean, I could talk to you guys forever. I'm intrigued. I want to learn more, but, I'd love for you to tell people where they can find the music. Where do you want them to find the music online? What's the best way to support, the Heroic Enthusiasts? What's the best way to support you guys online?
That is such a loaded question, Chris.
I know, right?
You know that. all of our music is available on all digital streaming services that everybody would have. If you wish to actually buy vinyl, which we have, the Illuminate is available on vinyl, you can come to the show and pick it up there not this coming Friday, but the following Friday. And our back catalog of CDs, vinyl, as well as digital, the best way to support artists is on Bandcamp.
Yeah, and that's what I mentioned earlier to one of the other musical artists is, I always like to ask that question because I find it to be very important. You know, it's not always the question that, you know, bands always want to, they want you to listen to the music. Mm-hmm. I have a strong affinity to, if people ask to be supported, I want to make sure people support them the way they want to be supported. And Bandcamp is one of the few platforms that actually offers the ability for people to actually support the artists, not just by listen. So check them out there. Also check them out at The Mag on Friday, September 12th at 7 p.m. Get your ticket, $20 on rochesterfringe.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming over.
Thank you, Chris.
And we'll see you next time with more Just Can't Not.
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Thank you. Easy peasy.
The Level Up Coffee Podcast is now dialed in.
We love coffee and stay connected to every development in the industry, both here in Rochester and worldwide, to bring you our unique perspective on the ever-changing world of coffee.
We're doing regular tastings, reporting on our travels, and trying to hold back tirades about the forces that make the coffee supply chain a neo-colonial mess. Join us on the Lunchador Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts, and stay
dialed in.
Hello, Rochester. This is Richard B. Cologne.
And Quanti Donnell.
We are the curators of the Behind the Glass Gallery, where we host monthly receptions on First Friday, showcasing three underrepresented artists from the Rochester area.
And on this podcast network, you can listen to us speak to these monthly artists to get another lens on their medium and how they contribute amazing things to the Rochester arts community.
Catch us at 240 East Main Street every First Friday. And
on the Lunch Adore Podcast Network.